Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
Fake the Nation, episode 387.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about culture, and where we finally talk about drug use on this podcast. I'm your host, Nagin Farsad. And today we're going to talk about how I tripped balls via a boatload of magic mushrooms. So buckle up. We'll also talk about person of the year, Taylor Swift. We'll talk about how Gen Z celebrates the holidays and about university presidents scoring an own goal at a congressional hearing. Today, I'm joined by, oh my God, what a panel. I'm joined by an incredible panel. We're doing the spirit of the holidays right here. A newly off-strike unemployed actor joins us, but she's actually been gainfully employed and on very many television shows in her time. I've actually been on the street with her when people stop her to say that they love her in this or that show. I've also seen her in on stage doing the Pulitzer Prize winning play English. She is incredibly talented. You've heard her on the show before. It is the one and only Tala Ash. Hey, Tala.
Hi. Thanks for having this unemployed actor on.
Also joining us. Now, you have heard me many a time. Work with this wonderful, wonderful comedian. You can also see her at the Tower Theater in Oklahoma City on Friday and in El Cajon at the Magnolia Theater on Friday, December 22nd. She's also host of the podcast Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone because she is the iconic and legendary Paula Poundstone. Hey, Paula.
Hey, you guys.
And before we get into the show, I just remind listeners to go to patreon.com/NaginFarsat to support the show. For as little as $4 a month, you get extra episodes of the show. Oh my God. Plus there's other tiers for more stuff. It's super great. Go to patreon.com/NaginFarsad. And also for just $1, you can support the show and get like literally nothing out of it except for the knowledge that you support the show. So there's a tier for everybody. Also, don't forget to leave your Apple reviews. In the new year, we'll go back to reading those delightful reviews. Don't forget to leave a review of the show that I hope that you love on Apple reviews. And maybe you're lukewarm about it, but still have been been listening for a very long time. I don't know. Now, let us get into it with topic number one. We're going to get a taste of cultural goings-on in our amuse-bouche segment. First up, tickling our social taste buds, is the Times Person of the Year. This year, it is, in fact, Taylor Swift. Now, maybe this was unsurprising, but I guess what did you think of Taylor getting this accolade? Paula?
I thought it was great. You know, a lot of people think that the person of the year is, you know, the most popular person or the person that Time Magazine likes the most. And it isn't. It's the person that sort of altered the headlines the most, I think is the way they say it, or something like that. Like, it's a person that, you know, affected some sort of change. And I think that it's fascinating that the right wing is very against Taylor Swift being that person, because remember when Greta Thunberg was Time's Person of the Year? I think Trump was still president and he was so mad about it because he wants that.
Right.
And I think he still interprets it because at one point it was Hitler. Again, not the most popular person, but the person that had
the most impact,
changed the headlines a lot. But Trump, I think, thinks of it as like a popularity thing, and he really wants it. Isn't that the thing that he has fake copies of framed?
That's right. I forgot about that.
Right?
Yeah.
At his golf clubs, he has himself, on the cover of Time Magazine, I think under the headline of Man of the Year. So I was thinking that it might be helpful because, when I want my dog to leave me alone, I'll give her, something to chew on, something to do. Or when you have little kids, you're trying to get a spare say, you give them some. So I've always thought that we should just give Trump, like, a variety show.
Sacrifice an hour of television a night.
Exactly. Just say, we think you're really funny. Here's your show. I'm sure it would get good ratings, and it would keep him
busy,
away from politics.
Yeah, he needs like a hobby.
Exactly. But I was thinking in terms of this magazine cover thing, Person of the Year, we could just come up with another magazine.
Yeah.
Like, he could be Man of the Year on the cover of the Weekly Victim. That's something that I think he would like. Or, and I think this one will really appeal to him, Man of the Year on Mussolini's Skateers magazine.
So, Tala, I have a question for you, which is like, the minute this time of the year, Person of the Year thing happened, I remember feeling like Don't Tell Me writers, Ian Chillag, was saying, like, he felt like there was a backlash to Taylor Swift. Like, the mere act of being anointed Person of the Year makes people kind of dislike you in some way. What do you think of, did you feel a backlash at all? Or is this just in?
Oh, yeah.
Talk to me about
Honestly,
the backlash.
I am more scared to wade into these waters than like Israel-Palestine. The Swifties are like not messing around. I do not want to incur their wrath. However, while I have respect for this, very successful female artist, did I personally think that there were people and things happening in the world that could have used this attention? I did. And I think in my personal social circles, I felt that reflected. That said, the fact that Republicans think she's like an agent of the deep state, I think it's amazing. It's really incredible. And actually, like, I think they're just jealous that they, perceive her. They're like, this is like a white woman. Why isn't she like with us? Like, we could use her as an agent.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think they're just bitter. And I think ultimately they just don't like powerful women, which is very on brand, very on brand.
Well, I also think Trump's behind it.
Sure.
The whole right wing backlash against her. And are there other topics and other people that deserve attention? Yeah, but you know what? It's Time Magazine. Are we really rising and falling on what they chose. I don't know. I felt like it was sort of uplifting. And in a time where everything...
Right, that it wasn't about some political thing or some, you know, dire economic thing. Although, it was like, literally, hey, this lady, like, did a lot of concerts that people went to. she dated a guy.
She was a factor in changing the economy, for God's
sakes.
That's true. And she registered, you know, hundreds of thousands, of people to vote.
That is
so
true.
I do feel she has... credentials, you know, I have some of her songs on my flat thing. Honestly, I couldn't say the name of one of her songs, but I feel like her presence and the Swifties and the, you know, there are very few uplifting.
No, she's definitely tapped into something deep and real for a lot of the population.
Yeah, and the songs that I have, I like. I just, you know.
Yeah, they're catchy.
I can't sing them, but she, you know, I can do Holly Jolly Christmas, but she doesn't sing that. I can only sing songs that I've heard literally a million times. So I don't know. I just, and again, is anything going to rise and fall on what Time Magazine puts on the cover of their thingy? No, it isn't.
No.
So in general, I just felt like, it was a nice choice.
All right.
It was a nice choice.
I like that take. And I think that in the Taylor bump or whatever they call it, when there was more people registered to vote and like whatever, that whole thing is like an actual political phenomenon. So I think you're right. It's both like a lady who sings some songs and does some concerts, but also someone who's had incredible impact on the economy and can have an incredible impact on the vote. So let's see what happens. Let me ask you guys about Gen Z holiday celebration style. So there was a poll of 2000 Gen Z and millennials that found that when it comes to holiday decor, a third prefer the classic traditional decor, 20% prefer to keep everything wintry and white, and 14% like to embrace trendy artistic decor. So do you feel like this is a big departure from the norm? I don't know why this was an article, but from the New York Post. But I don't know. Did this strike you as like...
All right, wait. Before we go any further, someone has to define for me these terms that I have never understood.
Okay.
What is Gen Z? What is Gen X? And what is millennial? I have no idea.
Oh my God. Yeah. Okay. So what is Gen... I know millennial is like, I think they were born in 1980.
And I think then, it's everyone. Yeah. Everyone at, oh God, before 1980, right?
Gen I'm a millennial. I think Gen X is between 65 and 80 or something. And Gen Z is between 97 and 2012. If you were born between 97 and 2012. So it's people who are right now like 25-ish. Whatever. Oh my God, is that math right?
Okay, I don't understand it any better now than I did when I asked you.
All I know is I am an elder millennial, I've been told, which is just really humiliating.
Sounds beautiful. Yeah, sounds lovely. Yeah.
You know what the proper response to that is? Fuck off.
Well, okay, so Tala, as an elder millennial, do you feel like your cohort was more of a traditional Christmas stylist than the Gen Z cohort, which is in their 20s?
First of all, none of these people own homes. I don't know what they're decorating. Like, do you mean like the tree I went and got like at the bodega? Like, I guess I have like a traditional style with that. I don't know. This is like a crazy. This is crazy.
But Paula, let me tell you one more statistic that I actually thought was very interesting. 46% of both those generations like their gifts to follow a specific theme. And here's the one I found crazy. 52% are willing to spend at least $100 on wrapping materials to make sure that gifts stick to an aesthetic.
Wow.
How important were wrapping materials to whatever generation you belong in, because we're unclear on generations in general?
okay, when I was a kid, and my sisters and I would sometimes, you know, wrap presents together, what was very important to us was for the pattern of the wrapping paper to match where the ends were connected.
Oh, I see. Yes, that's nice.
Now,
that's
you
nice.
Couldn't always work that out. Sometimes if you just folded the paper a little bit, you could do it. But, you know, it wasn't something that always happened.
Right.
But when it did, it was kind of like a modern one-armed bandit in a casino where no money shot out, but everybody cheered. It was it was very exciting. So that was I went through a little phase where I would just put things in a burlap sack. I wouldn't wrap. Never really cared that much about that. I also have been what some people might say guilty of, buying wrapping paper at the CVS after Christmas.
Ooh.
In order to catch the sale.
Catching
that's
the
smart.
Sale.
And then, that's just intelligence.
And then just keeping it in storage.
My take is that this is a generation that's received so many, that really values packaging in a way that I think that if you grew up with Apple products and the very first Apple, I mean, I think one of the things besides the actual iPhone, the thing that everybody talked about was the dumb box that the iPhone came in, or the dumb box that your MacBook came in. And so there was something about packaging that became, I think, like an obsession for a lot of us. And so I'm kind of unsurprised that gift wrapping has become such a big part of this process. I do think it's horrible because it's so wasteful. You know what I mean? Like, if I can reuse gift paper, that is, I absolutely do. You know what I mean? Like, I am all about, and I also was one of those people that would like take, like, you know, magazines and cut them up and stick them together and, like, you know, and make that into gift wrapping paper, because I was just like, whatever we can do.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. It's horrible.
Okay, I think there's an important factor. If I understood this topic correctly, I believe this survey that came up with these statistics, unless I'm imagining this, I think the survey was done by Michaels.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Yeah, that's right.
Which throws a wrench into any facts that, because it's all entirely in Michael's interest to have, and who knows who the sample group was, you know, what did they get the people from the styrofoam ball aisle? I don't know when you were last at Michael's, but there's an aisle there that has styrofoam balls and little pyramid shapes and cubes, any shape you can think of. There's styrofoam to go with it there in the Michael's. So I do think that... I do think that kind of mucks up the works here. Oh, looky, they found young people like to make their own decorations. It's a new trend. And yes, within the Michaels.
Right.
I think that, you know, if you were just to go to, you know, like a Subway stop, I don't think you're going to find that same
enthusiasm.
You know, Tony the Tiger could find that lots of hip young adults like to decorate with frosted flakes. I think there is. I think there is a
you're
profit
saying it's biased
thing here.
The New York Post did not do a clean.
There wasn't utter.
There wasn't like
journalism
a control.
Integrity.
This was not.
Yeah. This is entirely scientific. Okay.
Apparently Levi's found that really attractive people love to decorate their front yards with frozen jeans. So there is. McDonald's found that employees don't want to be paid well at all. So there are, you know, I think that there's bias. I think bias is the right word.
All right. Well, you know what, folks? Let me know. Where are you on this issue of how do you style your home? Are you a traditionalist? Are you new and trendy? What are you doing? I'm so curious to hear. And does your generational affiliation, such as it is, factor at all? Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to continue. Today's show is sponsored by Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I have used Rocket Money. And you guys, honestly, I had no idea how many things I was subscribing to that I didn't want to be subscribing to. I think we enter into subscriptions with a Pollyanna view that we're going to use as a subscription, even though it's a super obscure, you know, educational app from Albania that teaches Russian math or whatever. And then you're like, I'm never going to use this. Why did I get it? I should remember to cancel it. And then you don't. And I know you guys are like me, and I know you've done this to yourselves. And guess what? 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about. So we're all in this bucket. And I think paying for that stuff is so angering, and Rocket Money is there to help. Because basically Rocket Money shows you, hey, look at this is what all the things you are subscribed to. But then here's the bigger thing. To unsubscribe, you don't have to go through the whole rigmarole. Rocket Money unsubscribes for you with a click of a button. It's so easy. The other thing Rocket Money did for me, which I was incredibly grateful for, was reduce the cost of one of my bills. It was my cable bill. Yes, I still have cable. Rocket Money has over 5 million users that have saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. I mean, that tracks for me and for the number of things I was paying for that I'm frankly ashamed of. So thank you, Rocket Money, for like fixing the shame glaze on my life. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. rocketmoney.com/fakethenation, you guys.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
And we are back, and we're ready for topic number two. Last week, the presidents of MIT, UPenn, and Harvard testified to Congress about anti-Semitism on campus, and Elise Stefanik really tried to pin them on whether or not calls for intifada were against the university's code of conduct. Now, my question is, I'm sure you've heard the sound bites that kind of went all over the internet and all over the news. What happened here? I mean, there's a bunch of angles upon which to view this, and I will share my angles. But I'm curious, what were your initial thoughts about this whole mess, Tala?
I think it's really tricky. I think it was a form of political theater for sure. I think it was an opportunity for the Republicans to call out quote unquote woke culture and an issue that's like obviously very hot button right now. But I think, I mean, I found her line of questioning, Stefanik, like particularly disingenuous. I was like, your followers believe in the replacement theory. And like, we're supposed to believe that you care about anti-Semitism. Also, she's salty because she's from Harvard, and didn't she get kicked off a board or something? Like,
yeah,
it just felt like there was like a vendetta around all of it but I think it's super complicated. Obviously, these all of them women presidents and these, you know, institutions. I do not envy anyone who's like the head of a cultural or educational institute right now who are trying to protect free speech. And they're coming at it, they came at it from like a legal definition, and people wanted a moralistic response. And their responses, I think, were not ideal. But I think they were also like caught in political theater, and like it was a kind of gotcha situation. So I kind of think they were like set up to fail, no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I'm of many minds about this. My first mind is that I don't think Stefanik actually cares about anti-Semitism, as evidenced, you mentioned, by her MAGA affiliation. She used a replacement theory rhetoric in her campaign ads. So this seems super ridiculous for her to be the champion of it, you know, suddenly. My other mind is that, like you mentioned, she's a Harvard alum, so there's some score settling. I have another mind that she Congress in general, or the Republicans in Congress, want to undermine elite institutions. So it's like kind of like, why'd they choose these particular schools? Like, you know what I mean? That the whole choice
because they don't like powerful women. They're all women.
I know. It's like three female presidents from three elite universities who they think are like the banner holders of this wokeness that they think is a poison or whatever. So that I think is also like, you know, disingenuous. Also, the other annoying thing is that if you hear the boring parts of the congressional testimony, they do vociferously denounce anti-Semitism. And so it's just that, like, in the moment that got shared, where and again, I'm not saying they did it well. I think they need better media training, because the thing about being a president of a university is that you're the spokesperson. And like, what are you doing when you get asked a question like that? Why didn't you just say, absolutely, that's not a part of our, code of conduct or whatever?
And also, it is inciting. They kept on, like, referencing, like, it's not, like, actually inciting violence. And I'm like, it is. That is inciting violence.
That is inciting violence. Why didn't you say that? I don't know.
Yeah,
Paula, where did you land on this?
Elise Stefanik and the word morals can't, right? She can't even credibly ask the questions. She supports, a man who, wants to shoot protesters, peaceful protesters. It's just, and a guy who wants to be a dictator, a guy who, if he was involved, this is Trump, of course, that a guy that, were he back in power, would quote unquote settle the Gaza, Hamas, Israeli thing by just supporting wiping out Gaza. They don't get to ask the questions even. Mm. And I agree with you that probably they didn't answer the questions sort of as snappily as they might have. But overall, the wrong people are asking the questions to begin with. I have to say, having ventured that much, I am shamefully ignorant of other parts of the world. I don't travel the world because I have a lot of pets. I can't be away that long. I did do some, international travel before I had kids, but I haven't in many, many years, and I didn't go to college. I don't have, I'm not a historian. I know some stuff, but I don't know lots of stuff. I don't really understand free speech laws. People argue, for example, people will say, like, oh, I was censored by Twitter, but my understanding is that Twitter can't really censor because they're not, what's the word?
A free speech.
It's government that can censor.
Yeah.
And Twitter being a private business. But so and my worldview may be a little bit naive. It's very Peter, Paul, and Mary. I would really like to go to Israel, to the Gaza Strip, and just say, ooh, ooh, It's very if I had a hammer. That's
right, right, right. That's lovely.
It's not nuanced. It's not backed up with a lot of information. So therefore, I barely speak on the topic because I generally believe that people shouldn't kill each other. That's something I feel strongly about. And yet, having said that, I feel very strongly that we should arm Ukraine. Because what's his name? The guy who you who you should never have tea with or stand near a window won't stop. So that's really broken a lot of my. Putin has destroyed some of my Peter, Paul, and Mary world philosophy.
Let me add this though. You know, I think you guys are on the mark about so much of this. And then one thing that happened in the hearing that I thought was interesting was that the Republicans talked about events that were canceled on campus and ones that weren't canceled, that they canceled some events that were sort of like literally canceled, like this event is no longer happening because a speaker was like maybe on the right or whatever. There was maybe an anti-immigrant something that was going to happen on campus. They canceled that, but then they didn't cancel like something that was pro-Palestinian, whatever. I think that, like, if the Republicans are trying to make a point about free speech, which they weren't specifically trying to do, that's the funny thing. That was not the point, really. But in a couple of moments, they did make that point that and I agree, universities should not shut down anti-immigrant speeches. They shouldn't ban speeches from fuckbags who suck, because even though those fuckbags totally suck, they have the right to air their opinions. You know what I mean? And
oh my God.
And I am I was on the Columbia University campus. I went to Columbia for grad school when people like Ahmadinejad were invited. They invite a bunch of like real shitty world leaders to come speak so that the students can know what it is that these shitty world leaders think. And I was always on the side of, yeah, we need to know what shitty people think and what non-shitty people think, you know what I mean? And the range in between. So I feel like when it comes to that, the GOP is right. I've always bristled at a university canceling a speech from fucking, I don't know, Jordan Peterson or whatever. I agree that that's not something that should happen. And then the other thing I would say is, this is, again, not a point that I feel like was being made in Congress that day, but one of the things that happened for me with the Black Lives Movement was that this feeling that we took a moment as a society to give Black lives their recognition, like recognition that we had never really given them. And who knows if we did enough at that time, definitely not, probably. But I think one thing that
I would lean towards not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you measure recognition specifically, so whatever. But my point is, the feeling that I got was not just is that every group deserves that moment. We're like a pluralistic society. We are very heterogeneous. And I feel like every group deserves that kind of moment. And the one thing that the speakers, that the sound bites didn't relay to us was a moment of recognition from those presidents. And because that's what, the Jewish students in the moment of fear, what they want, and what they deserve, you know what I mean? And so, yeah, and Muslims get to have that moment, and maybe those moments can't happen at the same time. Maybe they can. I don't know what the rules are, but I feel like everyone wants that moment. I don't know. Does that inspire anything in either of you?
Well, first of all, I want to say that fuckbags who suck could be another magazine that Trump could be on the cover of.
Yeah, no,
Prince
yeah,
is not dead.
Okay, well, folks, and also I just want to let listeners know we obviously have a hard time talking about these things and get super worried about what we know and what we don't know and what we could say and what whatever. So just know, I think the three of us have very good intentions.
Hello, hi. This is Andrew McGuire, producer of Fake the Nation, and I am making my microphone debut right now to share with you some disappointing news for the rest of this episode. Just this last topic, Paula Poundstone, we lost her audio file. So if you're wondering, gee, Paula doesn't really have anything to say about this topic. That is completely why, unfortunately, we love Paula. It's a shame that we lost the audio, but we're glad that we have everything up until this point. I just want to plug all of Paula's great work. You should absolutely listen to Paula's podcast, Nobody Listens to Paula Poundstone, everywhere that you get your podcasts, and also see her live. You can go to paulapoundstone.com to find out all of the information for Paula. The rest of the episode will be an edited version to make it sound like Tala and Nagin are having a conversation just without the presence of Paula. Thank you so much for listening, and you're going to go back into the episode right now.
And now let's move on to topic number three. Okay, so this is a weird one, but I have to let everybody know that over the summer, and I briefly mentioned this in the past, but over the summer I did, I had a very interesting gig, which is writing for a travel magazine that sent me to a mushroom retreat in Jamaica where I did like really large amounts of psilocybin. I went and I tripped a shit ton. It was a week-long retreat. We did 3 therapeutic doses of magic mushrooms. And after each dose day was like a rest day where we broke it down with therapists in like a group therapy kind of atmosphere. And this article has finally come out. You can read this piece in Afar magazine. But ever since I did it and I've, you know, told people how the whole experience was or whatever, people just have 1,000 questions about it. And I just figured this would be a decent moment to take a minute and talk about this particular experience that I had and just psychedelics in general. So my question to start off is, have you done mushrooms, and are you curious about them? What's your relationship to psychedelics?
So Nagin, I read your article. First of all, everybody should read it. It's wonderfully written and just really, really, really fascinating.
Thank you.
I, similar to you, have grew up very straight edge, like smoked some weed, but like pretty much, you know, not into drugs, was always pretty afraid of them. And it's only recently that I've opened my mind to them, and I have done some like small doses.
By the way,
of mushrooms.
I feel the Iranian-ness coming through on you right now, where you're like very gently being like, "I'm opened my mind to them recently." Okay,
that's right.
So
you know. Yes, we recognize each other.
Yeah.
But about a year ago, I went to a place, which I will not name because it was in America and it is not legal here, where they administer mushrooms and other plant medicine. You go, you spend the night in like a little mat in like sort of a mansion, and okay, you like have an experience. You like meditate a little bit, and then they give you, and I did it sort of on a whim, actually, having done really no drugs up to this point. They didn't give me mushrooms, I think because there's like an intake process where you like talk to the person who's going to give it to you. And I think I was crying so hard that she was like, "You can't handle the mushrooms." So she
gave me.
What did
they give you?
So they gave me sassafras, which I guess is sort of like the medicinal, the plant medicine equivalent of MDMA.
Okay,
and
hilarious.
I had this very, very profound experience. I like saw my ancestors. I saw my younger self, like sort of all the cliche things, but it was very profound because it was happening to me. It felt like everything that everyone says, which is like, this is, you know, years of therapy into one night. But here is my question for you, Nagin.
Yes.
I had a really hard time like letting go to it. And at some point,
oh,
I remember
yeah.
getting up and going up to one of the people who was, you know, sort of whatever, a docent watching the proceedings. And I was like, "Dude, this isn't going to happen. This isn't happening for me." And he was like, "Okay. So can you just lay down and like, can I touch your feet? And I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, touch my feet. This isn't happening for me. And he started to rub my feet and I like felt my whole body sort of like heat up and like the trip happened. But it was really hard for me to let go. So that's one of my questions for you. Like, that first time, was there resistance? Like, was there resistance to the experience? Because there is like a fear element. I mean, and it sounds like scary, what you went through was like truly, truly scary. So anyway, I think it's awesome. I was very inspired. I kind of want to do it. Everybody should read the article.
It's funny to like look back at a trip and wonder if any of the things that you thought were so profound were just like total incorrect reads on the situation. But I like, so to answer your question, Tala, my first trip, again, like I barely drink at all. Like, I just don't do very much at all. And so the idea that I was, first of all, the one that was sent to this mushroom retreat to do ridiculous amounts of psilocybin was already weird. And oddly, in my first trip, because I kind of super didn't know what to expect. And what they do is like, they set you up in a lounge chair. There's handlers around, there's therapists around, there's nurses around. It is like you're extremely cared for.
That's the dream scenario.
It's the dream scenario. If you don't know what's going on, you just don't want to be alone. You don't want to think like for any second that someone's not looking after you. And I was being totally looked after. So I think I could just like melt into it. And it was like, fine. I will say the first trip. And also the other thing they do is they make you wear eye masks so that you don't see anything, even though you're in like a beautiful tropical location and the waves are gently rushing on the shore and all that stuff. You're not supposed to look at any of it because you're supposed to go inside and fucking deal with your traumas. But the first trip, I cried for several hours and I had a lot of realizations, blah, blah, blah. But like, I cried for a lot. And it was, so that first trip I got out of it and I was just like, fuck, dude, that was like a lot of crying. And so for the second trip, I think my body did have a hard time giving into it because I just didn't want to cry again. And the idea of spending another day just like crying, and to be honest, I did cry again. That said, and also the thing that I had the hardest time with is this thing they call an ego death, where you sort of like let yourself dissolve into the earth and that you don't matter and you're one with the earth. That I was like in an argument with my trip, where I was like, my trip wanted me to be a sunset and I was like, I don't know if I can have to be a sunset, leave me alone. And the trip was like, no, you've got to go do it, you know. And it was a very contentious ego death. I finally did like become the sunset, so like I did it and that worked out and I was one with the earth and whatever. But in general, like I'll say, and I don't know if you would encourage people to do sassafras, which I didn't know is what any of the thing was called. But I think that, again, if you've had a relationship with therapy where you're like, I've been doing therapy for years and I'm not exactly sure what it's doing, or like the change is so incremental as to be frustrating, I think that, you know, psilocybin is a good alternative because you end up embodying a lot of these realizations so much faster. I don't know, Tala, what did you think?
Well, that's it, right? It's like I think actually like talk therapy is a great primer for understanding what you go through when you go through these things. I'm talking as though I've done a lot of these, but whatever. But there is a very, very different experience to the body understanding something versus the mind. And that was my experience. I was like, oh, all these things that I've known, you know, intellectually, now my body understands them. And that's like the profound part. And that's why I think people say like, that's 10 years of therapy in one night, you know?
Well, folks, if you have any questions about psychedelics, a lot of you DM me on Instagram and on Twitter, increasingly less so on Twitter. Mm-hmm. But feel free to ask me questions. And check out the piece. Again, of all of the things I've done and written about, this has been the most people ask me so many things about this. I think the piece is long. It's like a nice meaty read. And hopefully a lot of your questions will be answered. But like, yeah, consider me a resource of someone who is absolutely not an expert, but a comedian who did mushrooms 3 times. Okay, so that's my expertise. Okay, folks, that is the end of the show. I am so happy that you guys joined me. This was so fun. I really want for the people of Fake the Nation to be able to follow you and all the wonderful things that you do. Where do they do that?
I'm just on Instagram. I'm on Instagram these days, and that's the only one. It's at Tala Ash, and that's where I am, I guess.
Yes, definitely find her on Instagram. She posted the wonderful things. and just in general, watch out for, you know, the next screen upon which you will see the works of Tala Ash. And you know, folks, you know where to find me. And if you want to get another dose of the Nagin Farsad Paula Poundstone on one show hit, you can hear that on this last weekend's episode of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, where I was guest hosting and Paula was on the panel and it was super duper fun. And also, I'm going to be at Carnegie Hall on Friday, this Friday, December 15th with Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And also, you can read that mushroom story I talked about in a farm magazine. Just Google it, Nagin Farsad and mushroom. That is the first link that comes up. I want to thank everyone who makes this show a possibility. That's our wonderful producer, Andrew McGuire. Thanks to Gabby Alter for our theme music. Thanks to everyone at HeadGum for making the show a possibility. If you have any thoughts or questions, you can email us at fakethenationpodcast@gmail.com. And we will be back in your earballs next week.
That was a HeadGum podcast.